How to make artificial intelligence not just intelligent, but also ethical. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Kimberly Adams. Artificial intelligence can certainly be used or misused for harmful or illegal purposes, even unintentionally, when AI is designed with human biases baked into its very code. So what needs to happen to make sure AI is ethical? Timnit Gebru is the founder and executive director of the new Distributed AI Research Institute, or DARE. She previously worked on AI at Google and Microsoft. Dr. Gebru says one issue with current AI research is the incentives for doing it in the first place.
The two incentive structures under which most AI research is currently organized is the two funding entities. One is the Department of Defense, or DARPA, and it's generally because they are more interested in autonomous warfare, honestly. That's my view. And then the second bucket is corporations. They want to figure out how they can make the most money possible. The question is, can we have a research institute that has a completely different incentive structure from the very beginning, and can we organize ourselves like that?
Can you maybe give me some specifics about what this is going to look like in deployment to actually have research based on an alternative incentive structure?
A lot of technology is commercialized from research, but as a research institute, that's not necessarily our goal. So our goal is, though, to think about AI that benefits people in marginalized groups. How do we conduct that research? How do we include their voices? How do we make sure that we don't exploit them and pay them? And my hope is once we do that, we can arrive at actual research products that are beneficial to the community because their voice is part of it.
There are plenty of examples of how bias can creep into AI. We just had a conversation the other day about predictive policing. But are there examples you can point to of artificial intelligence that's out there in the world right now being deployed for an ethical use?
So one of them is my former colleagues who are at Makerere University in Uganda created an app on the phone to help small-scale cassava farmers surveil their farms using computer vision technology. So that means that they can tell whether there's severe disease in their farms or not. And so I think this is great because this is, again, working in conjunction with small scale farmers, not huge, you know, multinational corporations. And cassava is a very important crop for food security, especially as you have more and more climate, change and climate catastrophe.
What is going to be different about doing this kind of research outside of a big tech firm as opposed to within these companies where you might have better access to what's going on?
If my goal is to work with people marginalized groups and I want to understand what issues they're having and what ideas they have for how to work in technology that might benefit them, I should spend more time with that group of people rather than the people in the corporations. The people in the corporations will tell me about what issues they're having in terms of the products that they want to build, but that's not necessarily rooted in the needs of people in the groups that I'm hoping to work with. The other thing that's going to be different is that the incentive structure is going to be different. So someone's not going to ask me, you know, how are you going to make money from this? Or how is this going to be benefiting Google? On the flip side, if I identify something or a technology that has proliferated, sort of like we did before I got fired, my collaborators and I wrote a paper about what's called large language models, a type of language technology that is being used by literally everybody, all large corporations. When we identified the issues and synthesized them in a scientific paper, they freaked out and I got fired. So I am hoping that that's not going to happen at my own research institute, right? So I think that we will have a little bit more freedom to discuss the root of the harms of these technologies.
You did leave Google in a very public way. You say that you were fired. The company claims that you resigned. How has that whole experience shaped the way that you're approaching AI research more broadly?
That's a very good question. I think that entire experience of being fired from Google, because I certainly was fired, has strengthened my resolve, to be honest with you, to fight the power that these multinational corporations have. I now more than ever believe that this issue of bias in AI is not just a technical issue. So when you're in these corporations, they want people to believe that it's a technical issue. You have to use large set data sets, and there's, you know, issues that come up with that, and it's a technical thing that you have to solve. But I truly believe that the root of it is the power that these multinational corporations have and the lack of worker power. So I really believe people should not lose healthcare the moment they are fired from their jobs. Because if people don't have these kinds of rights, whenever you have someone on the inside who identifies harm, they're going to be, you know, treated worse than I am, right? Like, there are a lot of people who've been treated worse. So we really need to address the root of these issues and stop talking about it as a merely technical problem devoid of the societal context.
Here in Washington, where I am, there's a lot of lawmakers who are pushing for updated regulations for the tech industry, including regulating AI. What do you think of what you've seen so far in those efforts, and what role do you think the federal government should play in regulating artificial intelligence or tech companies in general?
There needs to be regulation that specifically says that corporations need to show that their technologies are not harmful before they deploy them. The onus has to be on them. And then proactively, instead of concentrating powers on the hands of a few groups of people in Silicon Valley, if you look at Silicon Valley, there's like 4 or 5 people that have all the money and fund all the companies. We need to have alternatives, right? We can have, for instance, states that, you know, fund certain startups, certain groups of people from low-income communities, et cetera. This type of investment might not seem like it's related to AI, but it absolutely is, because these are the groups of people who are negatively impacted by AI and surveillance, et cetera.
Timnit Gebru is the founder of the Distributed AI Research Institute. And now for some related links. We have a link to the DARE website on our own website, marketplacetech.org. One project Dr. Gebru mentioned she's excited about is research that uses aerial images of neighborhoods in South Africa to trace the history of apartheid in the country. Another example she mentioned of AI for good is featured in a story from Wired UK about a group in New Zealand who pioneered speech recognition technology for the Maori language and who are now trying to prevent that data from being taken over by big tech firms. I'm Kimberly Adams, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.